Scientists Exposed radio show, part of the Freedomizer Radio Network. Yes, we trust science. It's just scientists we don't trust. Visit madscientists.exposed for many ways to listen or call in our live number at 319-527-6208. That's 319-527-6208. Press 1 to participate on the air. Again, that number is 319-527-6208. And now, here's our lead investigator, Suzanne.
Hi, and welcome to another exciting episode of Mad Scientists Exposed. And, you know, there's a couple of interesting things out there in the cosmos. And the big story that came out this week is that, this is on Forbes and on several other websites. Israeli scientists claim they're on the path to a cure for cancer. And the other headline I saw said somewhere within a year. Anyway, this is Robin Seton Jefferson on Forbes. It doesn't seem possible, but they say it's true. A small team of Israeli scientists is telling the world that they will have the first quote-unquote complete cure for cancer within a year, meaning all cancers. The Jerusalem Post reported on Monday. Okay, so there's the source. On Monday, and not only that, but they claim it will be brief, cheap, and effective, and will have no or minimal side effects. Oh, pop-ups. We believe we will offer in a year's time a complete cure for cancer, said Dan Arador, chairman of the board of Accelerated Evolution Biotechnologies, LTD, AEBI. I guess that's the stock price. I don't know what exchange it's on. A company founded in 2000 in the ITE incubator in the Kiryat Weizmann Science Park in Nes Ziona, Israel, just north of the Weizmann Institute of Science in Rehovot, Israel. A development stage biopharmaceutical company engaged in discovery and development of therapeutic peptides. AEBI developed the SOAP platform, a combinatorial biology screening platform technology, which provides functional leads, agonist, antagonist, inhibitor, etc., to very difficult targets. I think they're talking about software there. They must have some kind of special software that helps them do their research. Still, skepticism was high among those in the know. Weighing in on behalf of the American Cancer Society, ACS, on his blog, "A Cure for Cancer? Not so fast," says Leonard Lichtenfeld, MD, ACS, Chief Medical Officer, cautioned. It goes without saying, we all share the aspirational hope that they are correct. Unfortunately, we must be aware that this is far from proven as an effective treatment for people with cancer, let alone a cure. They said within a year, so I'll prove it to you. Lichtenfeld went on to list several key points that he says must in mind, no matter what the media reports say. This is a news report based on limited information provided by researchers and a company working on this technology. It apparently has not been published in the scientific literature where it would be subject to review, support, and or criticism from knowledgeable peers. Well, certainly not an American journal, but there are non-American journals that will entertain the possibility that cancer can be cured. My colleagues here at American Cancer Society tell me phage or peptide display techniques, while very powerful research tools for selecting high-affinity binders, have had a difficult road as potential drugs. If this group is just beginning clinical trials, they may well have some difficult experiments ahead. We're not going to put up with this shenanigans. You're not going to cure cancer. This is based, and his statement goes on, this is the American Cancer Society statement goes on. We haven't even heard from the Israelis. Why don't I jump over to the other article? This is just bad mouthing. Okay. Jerusalem Post. Bring up my tab. Oh. There it is. Pop up. That's an ad. A cure for cancer. Israeli scientists may have found one. Our results are consistent and repeatable. And this is written by Mayan Jaffe Hoffman, January 28th, just a few days ago. A lovely blue image of some kind of microbes. I don't know. A small team of Israeli scientists thinks they might have found the first complete cure for cancer. We believe we will offer in a year's time a complete cure for cancer, said Dan Arador of the new treatment being developed by his company Accelerated Evolution Biotechnologies Ltd., AEBI, which was founded in 2000 in the iTech incubator. AEBI developed the SOAP platform, which provides functional leads to very difficult targets. Okay, we read that part already. Our cancer cure will be effective from day one, will last a duration of a few weeks, and will have no or minimal side effects at a much lower cost than most other treatments on the market, Arador said. Our solution will be both generic and personal. It sounds fantastical, especially considering that an estimated 18.1 million new cancer cases are diagnosed worldwide each year, according to reports by the International Agency for Research on Cancer. Further, every sixth death in the world is due to cancer, making it the second leading cause of death, second only to cardiovascular disease. Arador, chairman of the board of AEBI, and CEO Dr. Ilan Morad say their treatment, which they call the MUTATO, which stands for multiple target toxin, is essentially on the scale of a cancer antibiotic, a disruption technology of the highest order. I'll bet. We'll see. You know, good things that have come out of Israel before have been suppressed. My father was a dialysis patient for years and years and years, and about 20 years ago, I don't know, around the early 2000s, word came out of Israel of an implantable dialysis device, essentially an artificial kidney the size of a soda can. But in the U.S., that would have put out of business all of the huge mixed dialysis centers on so many street corners in every city. All the nurses would be put out of business, all the we never heard another word of it. And, you know, it's happened with other things, too. But that one stuck in my mind because of my family situation. So this might be suppressed. It will be suppressed in the U.S. So your treatment will take, just add the cost of a flight to whatever the Jerusalem doctors would charge you. I think that would be appropriate. Let's see. Where did I leave off? A potentially game-changing anti-cancer drug is based on SOAP technology, which belongs to the Phage Display Group of Technologies. Okay, so I don't know if it's software or what it is. It involves the introduction of DNA coding for a protein, such as an antibody, into a bacteriophage, a virus that infects bacteria. The protein is then displayed on the surface of the phage. Researchers can use these protein-displaying phages to screen for interactions with other proteins, DNA sequences, and small molecules. Now, I don't really know what that says or what that means. You know, we could go through a dictionary and look it all up, and then we'd have a better idea of it. But, you know, go to the Jerusalem Post, and, you know, you can copy and paste into DuckDuckGo, maybe. DuckDuckGo has a pretty good built-in medical dictionary in it. Google got rid of theirs, and When anti-vaxxers, ex-vaxxers started passing around medical documents, they closed the medical.reference.com. They closed it, just plain out closed it. I don't even bother with those people anymore. I just go over to DuckDuckGo and they give me good definitions. Anyway, pop-ups jiggling my page. I hate that. Okay, interactions with other proteins, DNA sequences, and small molecules. In 2018, a team of scientists won the Nobel Prize for their work on phage display in the directed evolution of new proteins, in particular for the production of antibody therapeutics. AEBI is doing something similar but with peptides, compounds of two or more amino acids linked in a chain. According to Morad, peptides have several advantages over antibodies, including that they are smaller, cheaper, and easier to produce and regulate. And regulate? When the company first, yeah, not when other people have more money to be made with perpetual cancer. Let's see. When the company first started, Morad said, we were doing what everyone else was doing, trying to discover individual novel peptides for specific cancers. But shortly thereafter, Morad and his colleague, Dr. Hanan Itaki, decided they wanted to do something bigger. To get started, Morad said they had to identify why other cancer-killing drugs and treatments don't work or eventually fail. Then they found a way to counter the effect. For starters, most anti-cancer drugs attack a specific target on or in the cancer cell, he explained. Inhibiting the target usually affects a physiological pathway that promotes cancer. Inhibiting the target usually affects a physiological pathway that promotes cancer. Mutations in the targets or downstream in their physiological pathways could make the target not relevant to the cancer nature of the cell, and hence the drug attacking it is rendered ineffective. There's a reason why once you go through chemotherapy, the return rate is very high. And number one, they're messing with your immune system, and number two, they have this thing where the cancer finds a different way to survive itself. In contrast, Mutato, multi-target toxin. Okay. In contrast, multi-target toxin is using a combination of several cancer-targeting peptides for each cancer cell at the same time. So they're coming at you with three different guns. Combined with a strong peptide toxin that would kill cancer cells specifically. By using at least three targeting peptides on the same structure with a strong toxin, Morad said, we made sure that the treatment will not be affected by mutations. Cancer cells can mutate in any such way that targeted receptors are dropped by the cancer. I'm not sure what that said. We made sure the treatment will not be affected by mutations. Cancer cells can mutate in such a way that targeted receptors are dropped by the cancer. Probability of having multiple mutations that would modify all targeted receptors simultaneously decreases dramatically with the number of targets used, Morad continued. Instead of attacking receptors one at a time, we attack receptors three at a time. Not even cancer can mutate three receptors at the same time. Furthermore, many cancer cells activate detoxification mechanisms when in stress from drugs. The cells pump out the drugs or modify them to be non-functional. But Morad said detoxification takes time. When the toxin is strong, it has a high probability of killing the cancer cell before detoxification occurs, which is what he is banking on. Many cytotoxic anti-cancer treatments aim at fast-growing cells, but cancer stem cells are not fast-growing, and they can escape these treatments. Then when the treatment is over, they can generate cancer again. If it does not completely annihilate the cancer, the remaining cancer cells can start to get mutations again, and then the cancer comes back, but this time it is drug-resistant, Morad said. Kind of like, the whole antibiotic thing. You know, you don't complete your course of antibiotics, and then you get sick again, only worse, because then they can't kill it. So there's other modalities out there besides antibiotics. There's the silver stuff. There's the electronic microcurrents. There's particularly for surface, skin infections. There's lights, different frequencies of lights that you can use. And even plant lights have worked great for me, I can tell you. So anyway, let's see. Where did I leave off? I'm sorry. It does not completely annihilate the cancer, blah, 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 drug resistant comes back. He explained that because cancer cells are born out of mutations that occur in cancer stem cells, most of the overexpressed proteins which are targeted on the cancer cell exist in the cancer stem cells. Multi-toxin, what was it? The mutato throws me off. The multi-target toxin. Multiple target attack ensures that they will be destroyed as well. Finally, some cancer tumors erect shields, which create access problems to large molecules such as antibodies. Multi-target toxin acts like an octopus or a piece of spaghetti and can sneak into places where other large molecules cannot reach. Morad said the peptide parts of multi-target toxin are very small, 12 amino acids long, and attack a rigid structure. This should make the whole molecule non-immunogenic in most cases and would enable repeated administration of the drug. Whoa. I like the sound of this. Morad said their discovery could also reduce the sickening side effects of most cancer treatments, which stem from drug treatments interacting with the wrong or additional targets, such as your healthy body tissue, or the correct targets, but on non-cancerous cells. He said multi-target toxin having a combination of several highly specific cancer-targeting peptides on one scaffold for each type of cancer cell would increase the specificity to the cancer cell due to the avidity effect. In addition, I don't know what the avidity effect means, and the page just refreshed itself. Dang it. I hate when they do that. They're just driving their ad revenue. Ah. The whole molecule non-immunogenic. Morad said the discovery could also reduce the sickening side effects of most cancers, which stem from drug treatments interacting with the wrong or additional targets, or the correct targets but on non-cancerous cells. He said multi-target toxin having a combination of several highly specific cancer-targeting peptides on one scaffold for each type of cancer cell would increase the specificity to the cancer cell due to the avidity effect, A-V-I-D-I-T-Y. I don't know what that is. In addition, in most cases, the cancer cells that have a protein in common with the cancer cells do not overexpress it. Hmm. This makes a great difference between the two kinds of cells and should decrease the side effects dramatically, Morad said. I know people that have died of chemotherapy. Have you? Hmm. Or do you know people like this? This is wonderful news if that's the case. Too late for our family members. He equated the concept of multi-target toxin to the triple drug cocktail that has helped change AIDS. Triple drug cocktail that has helped change AIDS from being an automatic death sentence to a chronic but often manageable disease. Today, AIDS patients take protease inhibitors in combination with two other drugs called reverse transcriptase inhibitors. The drug combination disrupts HIV at different stages in its replication, restrains an enzyme crucial to an early stage of HIV duplication, and holds back another enzyme that functions near the end of the HIV replication process. We used to give AIDS patients several drugs, but we would administer them one at a time, Morad explained. During the course of treatment, the virus mutated and the AIDS started attacking again. Only when patients started using a cocktail were they able to stop the disease. Now, he said, people with AIDS are HIV carriers, but they're not sick anymore. The multi-target toxin cancer treatment will eventually be personalized. Each patient will provide a piece of his biopsy to the lab, which would then analyze it to know which receptors are overexpressed. The individual would then be administered exactly the molecule cocktail needed to cure his disease. However, unlike in the case of AIDS, where patients must take the cocktail throughout their lives, in the case of multi-target toxin, the cells would be killed and the patient, the cancer cells would be killed, and the patient could likely stop treatment after only a few weeks. The company is now writing patents on specific peptides, which will be a large bank of targeting toxin peptides, wholly owned and hard to break, said Arador. Morad said that so far the company has concluded its first exploratory mice experiment, which inhibited human cancer cell growth and had no effect at all on healthy mice cells, in addition to several in vitro trials. AEBI is on the cusp of beginning a round of clinical trials, which could be completed within a few years and would make the treatment available in specific cases. Arador added, our results are consistent and repeatable. Wow, that is really wonderful news. I can't pretend to know how the immune system works, but I know that if you keep it well nourished, you don't get cancer in the first place. I mean, I've watched too many people actually help people with websites even that develop cancer, and I've seen some interview that went into stage 4 cancer. But by not going into chemotherapy and by targeting nutrition specifically known to enhance the immune system, they were able to get better. So I think what they're doing here is they're replicating what the immune system would ordinarily do. You shouldn't have to fly to Israel for this, but it sounds like the American Cancer Society is really going to stand in their way. I mean, it goes on for another several paragraphs of this guy just ragging all over them, the American Cancer Society, ragging all over these people and not even addressing the modality that it would work, you know, or how it would work. So I saw an interesting video this morning. It was actually Mike Adams on he's got a weekly show on InfoWars that he calls Counterthink. And he covered several issues, but this one he spent a lot of time on. And he said it would be wonderful if this works, but the American cancer industry is not going to let them get away with it. But there are other provable cancer cures out there. I think vitamin C is one of them, and then there's a few others. There was the whole Royal Rife fiasco in the 30s where they announced on, you know, San Diego newspapers that he was curing cancer with every patient that came to him with these light frequencies that would penetrate the healthy tissue and target the cancer tissue. And they raided his lab. They smashed his equipment. You know, he died a poor man, a pauper, you know, three decades later in the 60s. This was in the 30s that this happened, that they crushed him. And then in the 60s, he died broke with a history of alcoholism because they just broke the man. So, you know, this has been consistent. You know, since Nixon declared the war on cancer in the early 70s, that he was going to fund research. I mean, I was cynical enough even at that age. I was a young teen that I knew the American cancer industry would never admit to finding a cure because all the money's in the research. It's not a reward system. You don't get rewarded for curing cancer. You get rewarded for perpetual illness, not successfully cure, you know, because they can't gin up. If they could cure it as easily as this, as maybe, you know, a couple of treatments over a few weeks and then you're fine, you know, non-toxic treatments, then they can't gin up all the panic and fear. And, you know, I've known people that have gone through cancer treatment and, you know, then they're bald for a few weeks and then their hair doesn't quite grow in right. Again, you know, it's really, really, you know, when the cure is worse than the disease, such as some of this vaccine stuff going on, then you really have to scratch your head and figure somebody's got a motive and it's not your health. It's not for your benefit. It's not for your health. Anyway, let me take a quick commercial break and we'll be back in a few minutes.
You are listening to Freedomizer Radio, where freedomizers freedomize freedom.
Please learn more about Freedomizer Radio by going to freedomizerradio.com and also Facebook us right at freedomizerradio.com. Catch you there.
Did you know that every time you swipe your debit card, those behind-the-scenes transaction fees make the big banks even richer? In 2016 alone, these fees added up to $60 billion. Yes, that's billion with a B. Well, what if there was a way to have the convenience of a debit card, but reroute those fees from the banksters to organizations actually doing good in the world? Organizations that protect the environment or feed hungry children? What if your swipes could literally change the world? Well, Groundswell SPC has found a way to do just that. We've designed a Visa debit card program that shares transaction fees with your favorite cause. Groundswell partners with nonprofit organizations that promote the card to their supporters. Their supporters then use the card to power the mission of the nonprofit. It's a win-win-win for everyone, except the big banks, of course. Groundswell is about to launch its first cards into market, and we're inviting you to be part of this movement as an investor in the company. Go to wefunder.com/groundswellcard to learn more. Set up a free WeFunder account and invest in Groundswell today and get your money on mission.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to talk to you about our newest sponsor, Misty'sGardens.com. Now, this is a contraption where you can grow food in your apartment, in a small patio, or if you're like me and you absolutely suck at gardening, this makes life a lot easier. It is a vertical tower garden. We can grow over 20 things at once. in a small, compacted area. Good health starts with good habits like eating wholesome foods, and with Tower Gardens, you can easily grow your own fresh, nutrient-rich food virtually anywhere year-round without soil. So Misty'sGardens.com, have a look at it, check it out, buy it, plant, and like it. Misty'sGardens.com.
Imagine standing barefoot on cushy grass while you use a professional-grade knife to deftly chop fresh vegetables on your organic bamboo cutting board. The team at MyZestiness.com wants to help your family enjoy home cooking like this more often. They do this by offering fun and functional tools that make your time in the kitchen more efficient and enjoyable. MyZestiness.com offers the finest and most interesting kitchen goods and accessories, all backed by their world-class customer service team. Check out their ever-expanding inventory today. Visit MyZestiness.com. That's zesty like spicy, nest like home. MyZestiness.com.
And we're back. And there was another interesting article today about an astrophysicist who had some things to say about Oumuamua. I don't know how many of you remember Oumuamua from a little over a year ago. This was the very strangely shaped, what they call asteroid, who flew into the solar system faster than anything that's moving now in our solar system, and flew out again. Just kind of took a slingshot, gravity slingshot around the sun, got a good look at the Earth, and kept going. Now, that's presuming there was anybody on it, any camera equipment or whatever, but as it exited the solar system, it accelerated. And nobody's been able to really identify why. There's two guesses, one of which is absolutely wrong on its face. The first guess, which is a possibility, is that it's a very large solar sail that could be no more than a millimeter thick. I'm not sure how they reached that conclusion, but being pushed out by solar wind. And the accumulative effects of constant solar wind at its back is what's accelerating it out of the solar system. The other one that's wrong on its face is the idea that, oh, it's a comet, and the tail that comes off a comet is pushing it forward. That's absolutely, absolutely wrong. A comet falls into the solar system from, far outer than the solar system, and it accelerates as it's approaching the sun because of gravity into the sun. And then the tail of material that flows out behind it is just material that blows off the comet. It's just water vapor that blows off the comet and gets left behind in its wake. It's kind of like if you were to, stick your bubble net in a bunch of bubble mix and then wave it. It's not because the bubbles are pushing their way out of the bubble net. It's because you're moving your net faster than the soap can keep up with it, and it leaves bubbles behind. And that's what a comet tail is. It's stuff being left behind. It's not stuff that's propelling anything forward. Absolutely not. And that's false on its face. And for them to float that when it's so obviously stupid on its face, I mean, these are not stupid people. I think that they were looking to not talk about the obvious, and that it was actually a live thing from, it's rolled off a Drudge Report. Now I'm going to have to go find it. But I'll find it because it was an interesting article. And headlines, go to astronomer, astrophysicist. What alien ship may be among us, Harvard astronomer insists. This is a Harvard astronomer. And I didn't know quite what he meant. I mean, there are people talking about they see things in the rings of Saturn with a good enough telescope. They can see, cigar-shaped UFOs that of the type that are seen around the Earth. But anyway, there's all different shapes that people see through the years. Anyway, but this is different. Alien ship may be among us, Harvard astronomer insists, despite grumbling and criticism from peers. People just really like to get stuck in their ways, don't they? This is by Avi Selleck, and I'm reading from the Chicago Tribune, but they're just republishing something from the Washington Post. So I would call this soft disclosure here. Before he started the whole alien spaceship thing last year, the chairman of Harvard University's astronomy department, the head of the department, was known – that's a big deal – was known for public lectures on modesty. Personal modesty, which Avi Loeb, L-O-E-B, said he learned growing up on a farm, and what Loeb calls cosmic modesty, the idea that it's arrogant to assume we are alone in the universe or even a particularly special species. Well, we are special. Every living species is special and handcrafted by the creative intelligence. I mean, there is nothing stupid about any plant or animal. You know, we have human beings have a particular type of intelligence. Excuse me, but there's a lot of things that we can't do. I mean, spiders have spider intelligence. Cats have cat intelligence. You know, everything within its own niche is very, very specialized and very particularly crafted. Nothing is random, or we would all be, you know, a hodgepodge pot of soup, you know, or not. Anyway, what Loeb calls cosmic modesty, the idea that it's arrogant to assume we are alone in the universe or even a particularly special species. Well, we are special, but so are they. That's my take on this. Anyway, the article goes on. You can find a poster for one of these lectures in Loeb's office today, and it goes on listing a bunch of photographs hanging on the guy's wall. Loeb stands behind his desk on the first morning of spring courses in a creaseless suit, syllabi for his afternoon classes. Now, when does a professor, much less the head of a department, actually teach classes? This is amazing. This is amazing. He must like the students. Otherwise, he'd just have TAs or TI, what do they call them? Teaching assistants do it. He points visitors to this and that on the wall. He mentions that four TV crews were here in his office on the day in the fall when his spaceship theory went viral. And now five film companies are interested in making a movie about his life. Because he's a scientist who will think out of the box. He's not afraid of criticism. But Galileo, I mean, that's his prime example. Somebody who just speak what he says. And consequences be damned, this guy just speaks what he sees. Anyway, a neatly handwritten page of equation sits on the desk on the edge closest to the guest chairs. Oh, this is something I did last night, Loeb says. It's a calculation, he explains, supporting his theory that an extraterrestrial spacecraft, or at least a piece of one, may at this moment be flying past the orbit of Jupiter. So I thought it was already gone. I guess it's headed on its way out, though. Since publishing his controversial paper, Loeb has run a nearly nonstop media circuit, embracing the celebrity that comes from being perhaps the most academically distinguished ET enthusiast of his time, the top Harvard astronomer who suspects technology from another solar system just showed up at our door. And this, in turn, has left some of his peers nonplussed. Such snobs. How dare he think of that stuff when we didn't think of it? Grumbling at what they see as a flimsy theory or bewildered as to why Harvard's top astronomer won't shut up about aliens. What you can't call Loeb is a crank. When astronomers in Hawaii stumbled across the first known interstellar object in late 2017, a blip of light moving so fast past the sun that it could only have come from another star, Loeb had three decades of Ivy League professorship and hundreds of astronomical publications on his resume, mostly to do with the nature of black holes and early galaxies and other subjects far from any tabloid shelf. So when seemingly every astronomer on the planet was trying to figure out how the interstellar object dubbed Oumuamua, Hawaiian for scout, S-C-O-U-T, got to our remote patch of the Milky Way, Loeb's extraordinarily confident suggestion that it probably came from another civilization could not be easily dismissed. Considering an artificial origin, one possibility is that Oumuamua is a light sail floating in interstellar space as a debris from an advanced technological equipment, Loeb wrote with his colleague Shmuel Bialy in Astrophysical Journal Letters in November. Thrilling ET enthusiasts and upsetting the fragile orbits of space academia. I like the little puns. Oumuamua is not an alien ship, and the authors of the paper insult honest scientific inquiry to even suggest it. But nobody else has a better idea, tweeted Paul Sutter, an astrophysicist at Ohio State University, shortly after the paper published. A shocking example of sensationalist, ill-motivated science. Theoretical astrophysicist Ethan Siegel wrote in Forbes, North Carolina State University astrophysicist Katie Mack suggested to the Verve that Loeb was engaging in a common practice in which an astrophysicist poses a theory that they might not believe. Somebody says, throw it at the wall and see what sticks, huh? Sometimes you write a paper about something that you don't believe to be true at all, just for the purpose of putting out there. I guess publish or perish, I think is what she means. She told the publication. Most scientists besides Loeb assume Oumuamua is some sort of rock. Be it an asteroid ejected from some star in meltdown hundreds of millions of years ago or an icy comet wandering the interstellar void. They're not that stupid. They know that what trails a comet is not propelling it. They know this. If you wave your bubble wand around, it's just leaving debris behind, but that debris is not pushing forward. But it's moving too fast for an inert rock, Loeb points out, zooming away from the sun as if something is pushing it from behind. And if it's a comet spewing jets of steam, nope. The limited observations astronomers made of it showed no sign of it. And you know what? When a comet passes the sun and the tail is behind it, once it passes the sun and it's going out back again into the Oort cloud or wherever it came from, the tail is in front of it. That proves my point. The tail is in front of it. This is not a comet. This is not a comet, and rocks don't accelerate themselves. You know, there's one other possibility that nobody is talking about is that this might be a highly magnetic object, and there's a magnetic field that is accelerating it. There's all this talk about, they've kind of suppressed a lot of the talk about the brown dwarf called maybe Nibiru or Planet 9 or Planet X or whatever you want to call it. But, they're one of these channels, and they did try to suppress him. He looks at satellite data of solar wind and, that is recording solar wind coming from second directions and things like that. That's causing all this magnetic upheaval on the sun. Now, I don't know if any of you ever watched Earthwatch, formerly known as BP Earthwatch on YouTube. He's all upset because the sun is flipping its poles, its magnetic poles. Don't worry about it. The sun flips its magnetic poles every 22 years. I used to work, this is what I worked with when I was at the Solar Observatory in Tucson. I was working with magnetograms, and this is what the sun does. Its solar cycle is normally 11 years, but it flips its magnetic poles every two solar cycles. So every 22 years, approximately, the sun flips its magnetic poles. But the sun is doing weird stuff now. It's not following the normal cycle of its magnetic of its sunspot cycle, which are tied to its magnetic fields. All the sunspots are in. But we, some of the instrumentation, and they've closed a lot of those down because people were looking at it and talking about it. Some of those, they've like shut off some of the public views of the satellite data because solar wind is coming from a second source, is likely a brown dwarf from the lithium that it puts out and things like that. And, you can look it up. The only thing that puts out lithium like that is a brown dwarf, which is kind of like bigger than Jupiter but smaller than the sun, and it only radiates in the infrared where we can't see it with our own eyes. I mean, if you have an infrared telescope and you know exactly where to point it, you might see it, but I don't have an infrared telescope. I have an infrared video camera that I keep saying I want to go out and photograph the skies and look for UFOs, but I haven't really done it much yet. But that's a whole different issue. But that would be how they would stay invisible, is if they're only radiating in infrared, but also this other planet. But anyway, I think there's a lot going on with the magnetic fields in the solar system. And if this Oumuamua is a highly magnetic object, that would be another explanation for possibly its acceleration. It's being pulled, not pushed, but pulled in a direction. That would be a non-intelligent idea, a non-intelligent, that means its acceleration doesn't have to be produced by some intelligent force like a rocket engine strapped to its back. It could just be, pulling along on the magnetic field and accelerating that way, and or something that's highly gravitational. But I think magnetic fields are actually stronger than gravitational fields. But we'll see. Now, I think we might know in time, because there's so much happening out there, so much going on, with the Space Force and the photographs of of things on the moon. And there's some people now starting up with YouTube channels. They're buying their own telescopes because so many of the others have been shut down and cut off from public view that they're just buying their own telescopes, high-powered, you know, the world has come a long way. It's affordable, probably on the order of like a nice quality musical instrument or something. And just aiming them at the moon when, you know, when the moon is bright enough to aim at, you know, if it's not a new moon and down below the horizon and all that kind of stuff. But and just photographing the moon, and they're capturing some pretty incredible stuff. I have trouble focusing on it. Some of it I can see and some of it I can't see. And this is another science that's advancing slowly, but we'll see what it all turns out to be. And I think it's going to be before Trump finishes his second term. I think we're going to know a lot more than we know now. Anyway, I should go on with this. Points out zooming away from the sun as if something is pushing it from behind. And I'm not even going to read that sentence about comets because it's absolutely wrong. Loeb argues that Oumuamua's behavior means it can't be, as is commonly imagined, a clump of rock shaped like a long potato, unless it's highly magnetic rock, but rather an object that's very long and no more than a millimeter thick, perhaps like a kilometer long, I don't think he's thought about magnetics, I should write to him, kilometer long obloid pancake or a ship sail, so light and thin that sunlight is pushing it out of our solar system. And while he's not saying it's definitely aliens, he's saying he can't think of anything other than aliens that fits the data. I'm going to write to him. And he's saying that all over international news. Many people expected once there would be this publicity, I would back down, Loeb says. If someone shows me evidence to the contrary, I will immediately back down. Well, I can't collect this data. I don't have, you know, magnetic readings of the entire solar system, but they are there, and he would know where to get them, Mr. Head of the Department of Astrophysics at Harvard University. In the meantime, he's doubling down, hosting a Reddit AMA on how the discovery of alien life in space will transform our life, and constantly emailing his friends and colleagues with updates on all the reporters who are speaking to him. I wonder if I can get on his list. In a matter of months, Loeb has become a one-man alternative to the dirge of terrestrial news. Ooh, hey, folks. I know we have proof negative right after this show, but I'm going to bail out and go watch the president's speech. Anyway, at the end of the show. Anyway, it changes your perception on reality, just knowing that we're not alone, he says. We're fighting on borders, on resources. Hey, you know what? Maybe the globalists are paying him to come out with this. I don't know. It would make us, because this is essentially the same statement that Reagan made. It changes your perception on reality, just knowing that we're not alone, he says. We are fighting on borders, on resources. It would make us feel part of planet Earth as a civilization rather than individual countries voting on Brexit. Well, you know, Mr. Academia, of course, he's going to be all Mr. New World Order stuff. But anyway, so now he's famous, styling himself as a truth teller and risk taker in an age of overly conservative, quiescent scientists. Quote, the mainstream approach is you can sort of drink your coffee in the morning and expect that you will find and expect what you will find later on. It's a stable lifestyle, but for me, it resembles more the lifestyle of a business person than a scientist. Well, you know what? I used to go in, fix my coffee, drink my coffee, and just, you know, program and eke knowledge out of data and stuff like that. And it was exciting to get it in goals like that. But on the other hand, it was too quiet around there. I'm a little bit more social than that. I was married at the time and I was having children, and it came a point where I really had to devote more attention to the children, and that's how my life went. And, you know, some people call that the mommy track, but, you know, I don't regret it. I don't regret it. They're all great kids. You know, they're grown adults now, making their own way. Let's see, it's a stable lifestyle. But for me, it resembles more the lifestyle of a business person. But the whole thing about starting businesses, that's exciting. You come up with ideas and launch it and see what floats. You know, just like Proof Negative and the Freedomizer Radio Network. You know, we have a whole bunch of really interesting shows going on here, and you better be tuning in to all of them all the time. Let's see. The worst thing that could happen to me, this is what he's saying, Loeb saying, the worst thing that could happen to me is I would be relieved of my administrative duties and that would give me even more time to focus on science, Lobad. So he's kind of laughing about it. All the titles I have, I can dial them back. In fact, I can dial myself back to the farm because plants are fascinating. I've got my little garden growing. every plant is different, and they have different life cycles and all kinds of stuff. Anyway, Loeb grew up in an Israeli farming village. He would sit in the hills and read philosophy books, imagining the broader universe, he says, a fascination that led him into academia and all the way to Oumuamua. I didn't have a class system in my head of academia being the elite, he says, as he, I guess he recognizes elitism in some of his fellow academics. That's good. As he leads a reporter into the locked chamber of the Great Refractor, an enormous 19th century telescope where he sometimes does photo ops. I see it as a continuum of childhood curiosity, trying to understand what the world is like. So this kind of childlike curiosity, this is what we all need. This is really what we all need. The world would be so much better. This is what homeschoolers point to when they yank their kids out of regimented classrooms, you know, for hours without fresh air, without sunshine under fluorescent lights, with, you know, a few bully kids sitting here and there in the classroom, you know, a few friends too, but, you know, they'd rather be home following their own curiosity. Anyway, he joined the Institute for Advanced Study in Princeton, New Jersey in the late 1980s, quote, where Einstein used to be, he notes, and later took a junior position in Harvard's astronomy department, where for 20 years no one had been promoted from within. They tenured me after 3 years. As he tells it, his life story sounds like a cerebral version of Forrest Gump. Loeb always single-mindedly pursuing his science and intersecting with the giants of the field, whom he regularly name drops. Stephen Hawking had dinner at his house. Steven Spielberg once asked him for movie tips. Russian billionaire Yuri Milner once walked into his office and sat on the couch and asked him to help design humanity's first interstellar spaceship, which he's doing now with a research budget of $100 million and the endorsement of Mark Zuckerberg and the late Hawking. Well, who the hell is Mark Zuckerberg? He's a kid that came up with a clever program. And it's just, this is not rocket science. Facebook is not rocket science. I'm sorry. Anyway, Loeb mentions casually that when he was 24 years old, he got a private audience with the famed physicist Freeman Dyson and then paused for effect beneath the 20-foot shaft of the Great Refractor, grinning until he realizes the reporter doesn't know who Freeman Dyson is. I'll tell you who Freeman Dyson is. He's the guy that came up with the idea of, there's civilizations out there that we can't see because they've put an entire they require so much energy that they've built a shell completely around their star, and they're absorbing all the sunlight from their star, all the starlight from their star, because they need that much energy. And so that's called the Dyson Sphere. Now, I've always thought it was the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard of. It's something out of a science fiction book, but not something a real people would do. It's just not it's a trap. It's, they would just find more efficient ways to do things. It's just, I don't know. I don't know how to explain it. It's just, I've always thought it was one of the dumbest things I'd ever heard of. But, of course, we see all these astronomers on YouTube expounding about it. Yeah, there's a bunch of them out there that are Mr. Personalities. I like to listen to John Michael Gaudier. He writes, science, futurist. He calls himself a futurist, but he's an astronomer, astrophysicist also, and he's got this buddy that has another channel called Isaac something. Anyway, so I like to follow these guys around, and it's just, I like their personalities. But this thing with the Dyson Sphere. Anyway, I digress. At midday, Loeb leaves the telescope and his office and descends to a bare white classroom to introduce the basics of astrophysics to a dozen new students. If he's mastered the national news interview by now, his lecture begins a bit stilted. He looks down at the table as he speaks. He asks the freshman, which is amazing that he's not using teaching assistants, at this most prestigious of universities to go around the table and list their hobbies. 10 minutes later, Loeb goes off script. Did anyone hear the name Oumuamua, he asked? What did it mean? Almost everyone nods, and freshman Matt Jacobson, who came to Harvard from an Iowa farm town, isn't that coincidental, volunteers quietly. There was speculation that it was from another civilization. Who made that speculation? Loeb asks, smiling. There's an awkward silence in the room, and then Jacobson cries, was it you? Oh, my gosh. And the professor smiles wider. So, I mean, that's all charming and everything, but pop-ups in my face here. Anyway, so I need to write to him and suggest magnetic fields are pulling it along. Then we'll see what article comes out in a few months or if he publishes another paper. It's just an idea, and I'm not going to write the paper, but you could. Anyway, so that's kind of interesting. Let's see, how far are we? And let's see, there was some other interesting stuff going on here. Here's another one. Now, this one kind of got me annoyed because they're pushing the depopulation thing again. And it's another astronomer. I guess they've run out of other scientists that haven't been tainted. They've tainted every field of science. And I think astronomy is the last one they haven't so badly tainted. Because, you know, these guys are not making drugs to kill people. They're not, you know, they're not building weapons. They're harnessing the atom, yes, astrophysicists, you know, the whole the CERN stuff, whatever. But, you know, pure observational astronomy is hard to taint until you start lying about the data. Anyway, will humanity survive this century? And this is NBC News. Wait a minute. What happened to the other article? It was on the Daily Mail, I thought. Huh. Let's see. Let me try this. It's just a different title, but it's the same story. Oh. Typo. Will the world run out of people? So it's the same story, but a different publication. Loading. Will the world run out of people? Book claims global population will start to decline in 30 years, despite UN predictions, and says once it does, it will never end. Yeah, just like global warming is a sure thing, huh? Turn off the pop-ups. Turn off the pop-ups. Let's try that. Yeah. Can refresh the page and actually read it. I like my browser plugins. Will the world run out of people? Book claims global population will start to decline in 30 years, despite UN predictions or UN goals. Well, in addition to UN goals. Anyway, and says once it does, it will never end. There are 7 billion people living on Earth. I thought it was 6.7. Expected to climb to 9 billion by 2050. Book says population will start to drop in roughly 30 years and steadily decline. But they don't say why. We'll go over the article. Authors say improvements in women's education worldwide will have a big impact. This is just women and nobody else, huh? This and other factors will cause many people to choose not to have children. There's more to this than that. You know what? Give me another few minutes, and I will play another. Hold on a second. Let me quick play a commercial break, and then Ed has called in, so maybe we'll talk to him first.
Are you looking for a new place to shop, eat, and save? Are you sick of paying full price? Would you like to save money at the places you enjoy most? Well, here's a popular savings book that is full of coupons catered to your local area. It's called Save Around. This book is full of exclusive discounts to help you save money around your town. Yes, that's Save Around. You will save money at restaurants, department stores, cars, even flowers. When I take my family out, there are 7 of us. The average meal was about $110 to $140. Last time I took them out, and I'm holding a copy of the receipt right here, the check originally was $120. With the Save-Around Book, our meal costs $82 at a place we go to quite often. Who knew? And there are a few places we found that we are going to check out. View the books in your area before you buy. Go to freedomizerradio.com or barefootislegal.org. Just click on your city, and within a few days, you will be saving money around town with your new Save Around book.
How would you like to make your work more enjoyable, be more creative and relaxed, all while sitting at your desk? That's exactly what my Serenity Rug has done for me. This revolutionary footrest, I can't even call it a footrest, because this thing encourages movement of your feet, which results in more blood flow. While traditional footrests advocate the motionless placement of your feet, I found that I'm unconsciously digging my feet into the long, soft grass strands of the Serenity Rug. It delivers an incredibly relaxing sensation that closely resembles the feeling of an exotic foot massage. If you have ever had a foot massage that made you want to stay there for hours, you know what I'm talking about. If you have not heard about the Serenity Rug, check them out at serenityrug.com and join the exclusive Serenity Rug community and enjoy a feeling of comfort and relaxation that most will never experience. They've sold out before, so I suggest you do your feet a favor and grab one of these. Again, that's serenityrug.com.
Do you want to live a happy and healthy barefoot lifestyle? Join Barefoot is Legal Saturdays, 1:30 p.m. Eastern, 10:30 a.m. Pacific Time to learn your rights to live a barefoot lifestyle. There are no laws against bare feet in public, and we are here to dispel the myths and empower you to stand up for your rights. Join full-time barefooter and victims legal advocate Nick Pierce on Freedomizer Radio or the Barefoot is Legal radio show Saturdays, 1:30 p.m. Eastern, 10:30 a.m. Pacific, and check out barefootislegal.org.
You are listening to Freedomizer Radio, where freedomizers freedomize freedom.
So we're back. Let's bring Ed into the conversation.
Well, hello there, Suzanne.
Hi, haven't heard from you in a while.
Well, hi. I've been hanging loose, or I've been laying low, or whatever. You know, I'm in my own world, my mystic world, and then sometimes I'm putting books online with my database. I'm close to 1,000 books now. I got about 40 books to go to have 1,000 books online. But you know, today I tuned in with you were talking about Oumuamua and you know, some of the stuff that's. Who is this Loeb guy that you mentioned? I don't think we've ever seen.
He's the head of astronomy at Harvard University.
Uh-oh.
He's the one that first proposed that it was being accelerated out of the solar system by artificial means.
Wow, good for him. Good for him. Well,
yeah,
that's
a possibility because he can't, you know, the only other idea that they floated out there is, well, it's a comet. But, you know, when a comet comes into the solar system, mm-hmm. you know, the tail is dragging the tail behind it. The tail's not pushing it.
Yeah.
And when the comet rounds the sun and is exiting again out to the Oort cloud or wherever it came from, the tail is in front of it. The tail is in front of it because it's just dust blowing off the comet.
Blowing off like an afterburner or something.
A rocket is actually being pushed by the flame behind it.
Hmm.
A rocket is actually being pushed, but a comet is pulling the tail behind it. It's just a snowball with debris falling off it as it flies. So, as the tail is in front of it as it rounds after it rounds the sun and it's flowing out into space again. Also, it's the solar wind that's still knocking the stuff mm-hmm. off the comet. It's blowing off in front of the comet.
Yeah.
So, if Oumuamua was a comet, it would be slowing down possibly. It wouldn't slow down. It wouldn't slow down. If the tail was pushing it, it would slow down as it came around. But anyway.
So when we're looking at historic photographs or drawings of, let's say, Halley's Comet, where there's the, you know, corona, whatever you call it, and that long tail, that tail is actually in front of the comet then. We're seeing it going.
It's only after it passes the sun.
I'm saying that.
When it's coming into the solar
system. Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, of course. As it goes around the sun, then, of course, it's going to push to the front, sort of, you know, to make it look
the
like
the solar wind. Yeah. The tail faces the same direction, which is outward from the comet, whether the comet is approaching the sun or leaving the sun.
Didn't Frank Sinatra have a song that goes something like, "The solar wind blew in my heart, da-da-da-da."
I think, wasn't that some wind? I thought he sang, "Fly Me to the Moon."
Fly me to the moon. And let me play among the stars. Yeah, he sure had it. He was pretty good, that guy. Old Blue Eyes, I think they called him. So anyways, you know, you were mentioning Earthwatch earlier. So I looked up Earthwatch on here. We don't watch him a whole lot. We really don't. It's just if something comes up.
We used to watch him more when he did more science. Now he does more politics.
He does more politics, but he got this one wrong. He has one today called the Ruth Bader Ginsburg Funeral, the funeral of Ruth Bader. He doesn't believe that she showed up at that
concert
or something like that. So he has some controversial stuff.
The whole country's talking about it, and there's not one single picture of her.
It doesn't make sense. People were whipped around and taken their phones and taken a picture of her by the dozens, by the hundreds. But no, there's not a single picture of her from that night, so I believe it. He's a little controversial. Do you know that this kind of surprised me? What was it? Oh, yeah. Earthwatch has only 26,400 subscribers. That is shockingly low.
Most people didn't find him again. We didn't know. It took us like a month or two to realize we weren't seeing him in the lineup anymore. And it's because he got thrown off of YouTube for saying some politically incorrect thing.
Really?
You know, and this is a little down home guy out of what, Mississippi or Alabama or something.
Yes, Mississippi.
but Mississippi,
with the great voice. Yes. Now here's a
he's a low key guy, non threat to anybody.
Yeah.
You know, but he's a truth teller. You know.
We watched John Michael Gaudier, but you know who we really haven't seen in a while. You know, we really haven't seen in a while is Mr. MBB333. I personally just sort of got bored. Personally, with some of his stuff, you know. He's local. He's from Gilbert, Arizona, which is like 100 miles from here. But guess what?
Sometimes he and the secure team pass information back and forth between each other about weird things going on in the sky.
You know what? Do you know what? It really helped him because Mr. MBB333 has 319,000 subscribers. He has more subscribers than Bill Still.
When did I start watching him? I think he maybe had 20,000. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
It's amazing. So, and I'm on his site right now, and the interesting thing is, let me see if I can tell you, let me load, okay. He has most recent videos, there's about four or five of them. Fire in the Sky News, its latest fireball reports, is five videos. Atmosphere Climate Phenomenon, again, just five videos. Like one of those would be some things to be aware of.
Oh, you mean his
of,
playlist? Playlist that he's lined up?
Historic polar vortex. Well, I'm not seeing them horizontally. I'm looking at them vertically on my Android device. But there's, and you can click on and see more. Then there's UV updates. You remember like about a year ago or 2 years ago?
And this ties in with the Higher Truth channel about the brown dwarf. Because what Mr. MBB333 was doing that we were glued to our seats for a while is that he proved that phone apps to tell you how much UV is out there, you know, whether to wear sunscreen or not, that they were lying, that they were downplaying the amount of UV out there.
Yeah.
MBB's people all over the world got their own UV meters and were sending them in readings from all over the world that proved that the apps that were tied into the National Science Foundation or wherever they're tied into were lying. Absolutely lying. And that's the good thing that Mr. MBB333 was showing us. And that's all tied to, you know.
Wasn't he like an affiliate or something of the companies who were selling it? Or was he selling them directly or whatever? But he was providing people with that information where to go to get
Am I wrong, or would that be Tears Watch? Wait a minute.
No.
Let me try their website.
You know what? Those guys were almost interchangeable, but, you know.
They were covering
been.
A lot
What's
of the
it?
Same data at the time.
Hmm.
Earthquakes, dynamic flow. Yeah, and, you know, the tying in.
I don't think BP Earthwatch could take on hundreds of people sending him that data from
But BP Earthwatch did. And what happened was that the company that was selling the UV meters, because he wanted to get a consistent reading from everybody, the company noticed how many more meters they were selling, and they traced it to his YouTube channel. And he says, "Hey, man, if you're going to be selling our meters for us, you might as well, get a commission, sign up as an affiliate and sell them, you know."
Sure.
So he did. After he'd already sold hundreds and hundreds of them, then he signed up as an affiliate and continued selling them. But he was collecting data from all over the world because they were, they were trying to block some of the solar data, and the phone apps were lying about the amount of UV that was reaching the ground. And what the Higher Truth Channel was showing, that this helium that was coming from the brown dwarf and the magnetic fields from the brown dwarf were inducing the change in the sun's solar cycle, and it was putting out higher. There was solar wind from two directions was allowing. Let's see, it was not just the solar wind, but the magnetic fields were battering the our magnetosphere in conjunction with CERN. CERN was running a bunch of crap, and it was draining our magnetosphere. Yeah. And so the UV, we were not being protected from cosmic rays and the sun.
We haven't
solar
heard
wind
a thing
stuff.
About
and
CERN in months. We haven't heard a thing about CERN.
I did actually on one of these. I can't prove it, but you know, there's beforeitsnews.com talking about the arrest of George Soros and all this, but there was mention of CERN in that, but I can't prove anything on that site, so I don't know. But they mentioned CERN.
So anyway,
I don't know.
Yeah. So I'm still looking at Mr. NBBTV's site. Okay, so he has fire in the sky news, then he has atmosphere, climate phenomena, which includes like polar vortex and stuff, then UV updates, which we were just talking about, then just strange phenomenon, mysterious skylights. He has an overlap in a couple of different categories here with Secure Team 10. Then he has sun, space, solar storms, where he's looking at strange events, you know, in the sun or whatever. Although, you know, nobody.
Yeah,
really
and, you know, that's all tied to the earthquakes and volcanoes that we're having, too, because of all this stuff going on in the solar system, it's feeding these extra magnetic energy into our poles, which is kind of into our poles and heating up the core and causing all this extra volcanism and earthquakes and stuff. But I think it's also there's another headline on Drudge I didn't even click on why is the North Pole moving so fast, crossing from the Canadian shore of the Atlantic, of the Arctic Ocean to the Siberian shore. I mean, it's moving really fast,
not quite,
I think it's being pulled like a Scotty dog by the brown dwarf.
Could be, that's changing everything, right? That if the magnetic pole changes, that shifts slightly. Is there such a thing as the magnetic equator? Not really, huh?
No, the magnetic field is like a giant toroid. It's a giant donut shape, with the poles being the holes of the
slightly,
donut.
Then everything shifts, though, so it could be that parts of continents end up moving closer or farther away from where this is all happening. Okay, let me finish up. So he has big quakes and earthquakes. Then he has solar health, like coronal holes, the sun and atomic frequencies. All that is pretty doggone pretty good. Then at one point he says YouTube has Mr. MBB333 in its crosshairs. That's 1 year ago. They had him in his crosshairs. They didn't like his stuff. Neutron stars.
They probably demonetized him.
Health science. Yeah, they were starting to demonetize him at that point. And then finally, health science. How to alkaline your bottled water. He was testing different brands of water for pH and for alkaline. That was actually 2 years ago. I didn't know it was that long ago. So, Suzanne, who else do you think would be worth people following on, well, like a weekly basis to see what they're doing? Would Anton Petrov and his stuff on stars?
He is good. But Anton Petrov, he has daily things where he recreates solar system events in his software. Mm-hmm. And it's free software that you can install, too.
He's got amazing software.
He put out one really political video that I got really angry about. like we're all supposed to bow down. And I forget if it was vaccines or if it was religion or what it was. He had something really nasty to say, which is unusual for his type of his video where he just talked about science and he runs his little simulation screen for you, you know, about solar system science. But
he didn't have any reason to talk about vaccines on his show.
It was something political. It had nothing to do with his astronomy. It was it was vaccines, but there is a campaign to stop you from reading the science on vaccines. So I'm not surprised that they would want you to stop reading solar system science extra sources of solar wind that happen to be sharing, a little bit beyond Jupiter, a little bit beyond Neptune that might be highly magnetic.
Yeah.
For some reason, they don't want us to know that there's another planet, star out there.
They're holding on to as much information as they can. We had that old buddy 20 years ago or something. You know what? We had this guy. What was his name? It doesn't matter what his name was, but he's back in New York State. And he always had this. It wasn't privileged. What was it that he called it?
He goes, I can't tell you that. That's proprietary. That's proprietary.
Proprietary.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, he started a story.
Nothing our scientists do is proprietary because they're paid for with our tax dollars. They're paid for with our tax dollars, and how dare they shut them off? I know there's another channel we watch, Mary Greeley, where she just watches the meters at
Yellowstone,
the seismometers at Yosemite or Yellowstone. And she's telling
every
you how.
Time there's a,
yeah.
Every time there's a 3.0
every time there's something big, they shut the instruments off.
She puts a video out on it. She takes it a little too seriously.
Yeah.
It's probably better when she talks on disasters that happen in other parts. I mean, real disasters.
They don't like people talking about the data on before they've had a chance to write the paper and get the publishing credit.
They don't like people to
read the instruments and have the data before they write before they get their publishing credit or something. So they turn off the feed to the website. And that's totally illegal.
Yeah.
We're taxpayers, and we have a right to that data. So
I think you're absolutely right. They don't want some amateur. I had a lot of problems on 20 years ago on some of these sites, like those PsyGeo earthquakes. It was part of the – what was it called? UNA something or other. What was that whole thing that had thousands and thousands
news groups.
Usenet. Was it Usenet? I think that's what it's called.
Before the web.
I would get into all kinds of discussions with these very, very serious academic types, and they would say, you know nothing. Get the hell out of here. Stop wasting our time.
Was exactly what they're confirming now is that depending on where planets are in their orbits, they affect earthquakes on the Earth. And that's been proven now beyond a doubt.
Four or 5 years, I was telling them there's astrological patterns that happen before big earthquakes occur. And
if you had used the term astronomical patterns, if you had used the term astronomical, they would have.
Yeah, if I had said astronomical, that might have worked better. And then one day, he says somebody on there says that the what was it? Who was giving a grant? There were some big grants that were being given out to see if there was an astronomical pattern of planets that had something to do with Earth. And I said, hey, Ed, this is your chance. Jump on it, go there. But I wasn't very good at coordinating this kind of thing with grant money and governments and stuff like that, so I didn't do it. But anyway, a lot of the things that I said back then came back and bit them on the butt,
true.
Yeah, exactly. So can you think of any – now, who was it that you said had two sites or two things? Was it John Michael Godier? Had a site, and then you said he's got another site somewhere? Because I can't find
He's got a buddy, Isaac something. I forget Isaac's last name. They link to each other's channels on YouTube. They link to each other's channels.
Isaac.
So they're pretty good.
Isaac Hayes. Isaac Hayes. Isaac Arthur?
Isaac Arthur.
Oh, okay. I'm clicking on it, and we're getting Isaac Arthur. He has 337,000 subscribers. Latest from Isaac Arthur. Fermi Paradox, panspermia, the dark forest,
Yeah,
theory.
I don't buy all this stuff. But they're putting out theories, you know, and it has an entertainment value. I don't necessarily buy everything, but I buy a lot of it. Not Dyson spheres, though. I don't buy Dyson spheres.
Something about the dark forest theory is, if we're in a dark forest, we need to hide. We don't need to make a whole bunch of noise and attract people and creatures to our attention, you know. So if you're in
the middle of... that's what Stephen Hawking said.
Yeah.
Stephen Hawking said that. We should not be putting out signals trying to communicate because we don't know who they are.
Yeah.
They might come eat us.
You
know,
he felt the real danger from it. He felt the real danger from it. Yeah. Colonizing Mars. Subterranean civilizations, that's kind of interesting. You know, you wonder, sometimes could be a civilization that lands here on Earth someplace. But you know what? Maybe they burrow underground right away and create, caverns and stuff, like all these caverns, these mysterious.
Yeah, I think that's why it's
hundreds
Elon
or thousands
Musk,
of there's thousands of miles of caverns under the United States and other countries. No, in Europe.
Yeah.
And
they
know,
just
from
discovered
Italy,
them
Austria,
under Europe,
England.
1,000 miles of tunnels
now,
all
the
over Europe.
Those? I think it was the little people in the hills.
Or pre-Diluvian civilizations.
Well,
hey, there's a theory now on how the pyramid blocks were made, and also the Peruvian blocks that are so intersected like jigsaw puzzles, that they think they were done with chemicals, that they were carved. Now,
with
that doesn't explain how they were lifted into place. It doesn't explain how they were lifted into place, but it might explain the fine shaping of them.
At the borders. They wanted to see the border. Yeah.
Well, but the interlocking jigsaw shapes to them apparently is very good for withstanding earthquakes, that everything jiggles up, but then it settles back into its original position. That was the reason for those jigsaw shapes in the Peruvian architecture. Pre-Diluvian stuff, before the Incas were there and all that.
I hate to break the continuity of your show, but I'm going to try to find who's broadcasting the State of the Union 2019.
Golden
and the
State
Democrat
time.
Response. Well, it,
I don't
know,
I don't care
look,
about
this. that
woman lost an election.
Forward,
I'm not even going to watch her.
But you know, as
when
I look
the president,
for this
I know Golden State Times has it.
No, but here's the problem. The problem is that YouTube is listing these in order of the major outlets like CBS News, Time.
So what?
Place, TV,
go right
Washington,
to Golden State Times.
Know.
I'm not going to patronize CNN.
Should I go to Golden State Times then? You think so?
Go straight
there.
They scheduled it. I checked it today to see what time it would start.
Oh, wow. Okay. Is that better than White House? Would White House also not have something
that? Whitehouse.gov. Well, you know what? I don't know if they'll have it because it's not at the White House.
Oh,
it's in Pelosi's face in the congressional.
Okay.
I was trying to figure out why if Pelosi's put up such a fight, why couldn't Mitch McConnell just have it over there? And the reason that they have it in the House, I think, is because the House is so much bigger. They can squeeze in a few hundred senators, but they can't squeeze in 500 some odd Congress people next to the 100 senators in the Senate chamber.
Sure.
So that's why they do it in the House. But,
that makes sense.
I would have been fine to have it
televised.
You still have a few minutes left.
You still have a commercial left, don't you? Or do you do your commercials?
No, I played two breaks so that I wouldn't have to interrupt you while we were talking.
Okay.
I mean, I played the earlier break,
sweet.
And then I played a break before bringing you on, so we wouldn't have to interrupt each other.
Yeah, I only waited about a half hour, so that was fine.
I'm sorry.
Hey,
I should have looked at my screen sooner.
I realized that was the problem, that your screen was covered with other sites and stuff like that. You know.
Well,
you
the articles
screens,
I was reading
you know,
to people.
All these big timers.
That's a really good idea. And you know what? I know how to do that.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Screens, that's a great idea. Okay, talk to you later. Have a good evening.
Okay.
Thanks for taking my call. Thanks
oh,
for
you're
taking
welcome.
My call.
You're welcome. So I'm refreshing my screen here, make sure I didn't miss another caller somewhere. Excuse me. So the cancer news is good. You know, certainly I recommend keeping your nutrition level high so you don't get cancer in the first place, keeping your immune system in tune. And for, you know what, It's illegal for me to tell you don't get vaccinated because I'm not a doctor. I'm not a doctor, but I myself am refusing all vaccines the rest of my life. I'm not going to let anybody in there to screw around with my immune system. That's me. I'm not going to do it. I've seen too many people hurt and killed by vaccines. My own mother was nearly, was within an inch of being killed by the pneumonia vaccine. And the doctors admitted it at the time. It wasn't un-PC to admit it. But there's all this stuff about, you know, trying to spin the meaning of the science data. And they just need to stop it. There's a lot of smart people out there that don't have PhDs. You know, okay, so they're not going to publish this in their magazines, in their journals, if we don't have PhDs. But we can read. We can make conclusions. I'm just stunned that this guy with the Oumuamua stuff never thought of magnetic fields pulling it along. So I am going to write to him, and I don't care if he goes and he writes a paper. You know, I've written to people before and affected things. You know, we had, you know, if you all remember back to the Tucson shooting of Gabby Giffords and the guy that shot her, got packed off by the judge to a mental hospital in, I think it was Missouri, because until he was well enough, he was schizophrenic, and he was going off his meds because I guess they weren't helping him. And so he got packed off, and they were forcing him to take schizophrenia meds, but it wasn't helping him. It wasn't helping him. You know, he and his lawyers kept petitioning to come back to Tucson and have his trial, and the judge said, no, you're not well yet. You're not well yet. Your doctors say you're not well yet. Well, around that time, there was the news stories that hospitals were noticing if they gave schizophrenics antibiotics for their acne, that the schizophrenia would go away. So they were organizing these new studies. And that just came out, the success of that trial apparently just came out like a couple weeks ago, also on the Drudge Report. And it's toxoplasmosis. It's a toxin, a parasite from cat boxes, or you can get it from uncooked pork. And it's a parasite that gets in your brain and infects your brain and causes schizophrenia symptoms. Anyway, beginning these studies. And I wrote to his lawyer, and I said, well, you know, you could ask his doctors about this off-label thing and see if they can't move this trial along, because I'm no fan of Jared Loughner, but you know what? Within 5 months, he was well enough, recovered enough from schizophrenia to plead guilty. And he was well enough to sign himself into prison the rest of his life for shooting Gabby Giffords and killing several people. So I think I do affect the world sometimes. And so I'm going to write to this guy and say, hey, you're not talking about magnetics here. It's not just an empty solar system out there with just gravity and some dust. There's more to it than that, a lot more to it than that. So with a minute or two left to go, I should clear the decks here for the proof negative show. And I'll see if I ever hear back from this guy. Anyway, y'all have a great week, and you know, follow this cancer thing. Don't let them get away with suppressing this one too. So have a great week.